Attention! This makes absolutely no sense. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Xander's Facts.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into the latest edition of the Xander's Facts podcast. I am, of course, the aforementioned Xander. It is episode 134 here on Wednesday, March 6, 2024. Thank you all so much for listening. We are finally back with a brand new podcast. I am super excited. We've got brand new facts this week. And we are focusing our fact-filled attention this week on grocery stores, which I know may seem a little dull, but there's some exciting, well, I don't know if exciting is the right word, some interesting developments in the world of grocery stores that we're going to talk about this week on the podcast that are going to affect you, even if you don't know it. So we're going to talk about that in just a second. Before we do, just wanted to remind you all that if you like the Xander's Facts podcast, if you've never listened before, if you think you're going to like the facts on this week's edition, remember to follow this podcast on your podcasting app platform, download this episode to your device, rate and review the podcast, check us out on all the socials, Threads, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, at Xander's Facts, that is Xander with a Z, and most importantly, remember to tell all your friends, y'all spread the facts, tell all your friends about the podcast, the newsletter as well, Xander's Weekend Facts. If you didn't know, it is a recap of the week's top headlines that comes out every Sunday morning. It is written by yours truly. Sign up. It is free to do so to get it in your email inbox every Sunday morning in this episode's description. The link is there. And also check out the Xander's Facts link tree because it has all the Xander's Facts links that you need, including for any of our past episodes of the podcast. Wherever you're listening to this, you could probably find all of our past episodes. But remember to listen to any of our past 133 episodes because we focus on something new every single week. So make sure to check all those out. But this week, we are focusing on, as I said, grocery stores in America, which is kind of deviating off the beaten path for this podcast. We don't really talk about things like this, but something in this world caught my eye recently. And so I wanted to talk about grocery stores because if you think about it, grocery stores are basically one of those things that are so integral to our daily lives that we often take them for granted, you know? Like, if we didn't have grocery stores, where would we get all our foods and beverages and all the other stuff that we need to basically survive, you know?
Yum!
You know, the ways that grocery stores operate are also extremely complicated. If you've ever watched those videos on YouTube, which I did to research for this podcast, of the supply chains of the thousands of products that are sold at grocery stores, you know the parts of the store we don't see are incredibly complex. But it's not just the product timelines of grocery stores that are complex, because where exactly you shop, the exact grocery store you go to, has also become a complicated matter, because we all know of the major brands in the US. There's Walmart, Target, Costco, and the like that all sell groceries and many other things too, so they're not just grocery stores, but there's also just the typical grocery store, or the supermarket brands like Kroger, Safeway, and Publix, and many others that we typically rely on just to get groceries. Well, this week, I wanted to talk about grocery stores because two of the largest grocery store companies in the US, Kroger and Albertsons, have announced plans to merge, and there is a lot of controversy surrounding that deal. So much so that the federal government is now even attempting to stop the deal from happening in court, which I was like, that's interesting. So I wanted to take a look at it. So this week on the podcast, we're going to take a look at the Kroger-Albertsons deal, why the companies say it's happening, and why its opponents say it could be bad for consumers. But to get to that point, we of course have to provide the foundation. How did we get to this point in the grocery store industry that many people are opposing the merger of two grocery store companies? And how many stores do these two companies own? So y'all, let's get to the facts. Before we dig down into that Kroger-Albertsons deal that's getting so much scrutiny, I wanted to go back, and as we often do on this podcast, take a little history lesson, go back down memory lane to take a look at how the current model of the supermarket came to be.
Let's do it.
Because as with most things in life, the current model, the current supermarket or grocery store as we know, has not always been the reality. Because for many years, before grocery stores and supermarkets, there were only specialty stores you could go to buy your goods. You'd have to go to one store to get your meat, another to get your bread, another to get your produce, and so on. And of course, those still exist. We still have bakeries, we still have butchers all over the place. But they're no longer the only ways you can get those products, you know, because it wasn't actually until 1915 that the Astor Market in New York City was founded, one of the predecessors to the modern supermarket. And it wasn't a success. It closed down just 2 years later, but it was really the first inexpensive food market that featured wide varieties of products under one roof. But then the next year, 1916, would finally come a successful concept, because in Memphis, Tennessee, in that year, entrepreneur Clarence Saunders opens the first Piggly Wiggly grocery store, a chain that, if you didn't know, is still in existence today in the South and in the Midwest. And what made Piggly Wiggly unique from everything else out there was that it wasn't only a place where shoppers could gather a wide variety of items in one place, which you really didn't have before, but it was also the first grocery store that was self-service, which you may not know what that means, but that's how grocery stores operate today. Because previously, when you would go to a store anywhere in the country, basically, you'd bring the store clerk, the person who worked there, a list of what you needed, and they would go get those items for you. You wouldn't shop around. But at Piggly Wiggly, you could finally choose the items you wanted, which is pretty funny how that was revolutionary 100 years ago. And now 100 years later, today, we can go on the Walmart app or the Target app or the Kroger app and choose the items that we want. And then we can drive over to the store an hour later and they'll just deliver it to us in our cars. So we've kind of moved back in a way, if you think about it. But of course, a lot less technologically advanced, but that's how grocery stores, or stores, because we didn't have grocery stores, were back before Piggly Wiggly in 1916, which was the first store where you could actually go around the store and pick out everything that you wanted. Then, the next decade plus, you get regional grocery store chains like Kroger, Safeway, and A&P, which is the Great Atlantic and Pacific Tea Company, if you didn't know. That was a major chain, which is no longer in existence. But these companies had actually started decades earlier. Kroger and A&P were founded in the 1800s, but at this point they began to follow Piggly Wiggly's lead in self-service grocery stores at this time. But still, these stores didn't include important items like meat and produce at a cheap price, which is how you get to a supermarket, is inexpensive. Until 1930, because in 1930 in Queens, New York, a former Kroger and A&P executive opened King Cullen, which is widely believed to be the first supermarket in the U.S. and in 1930s, even as we're going through the Great Depression, because cars became more and more popular and accessible and cheaper, which allowed people to travel longer distances, of course, in a shorter amount of time, and refrigerators began popping up in more and more homes during this time, King Cullen was able to become a success, which, by the way, King Cullen is still an active franchise. It has 27 locations on Long Island, so it's, I don't know if the original is still there, but the chain is still there.
Cool facts, bro.
These were really the first stores in what has now been nearly 100 years of American supermarkets. They were the ones that laid the foundation for what we have now, and we've, of course, had evolutions since then. In 1937, you get the first iteration of self-checkout, which is nothing like what we have today. They didn't have a voice yelling at you to put your items in the bagging area. And that iteration didn't turn out to work, but it was well ahead of its time. And the shopping cart came out around that time. The international foods aisles became popular in the 1950s after World War II, because a bunch of people were in Europe and the Pacific, and they said, well, we'd like foods from other parts of the world. International food aisles became popular. Barcodes changed the way these stores work in that decade. In the 1960s, you had these things called trading stamps, which were the first customer loyalty program, which is every store has a customer loyalty program now. In the 1970s, you got 24/7 stores for the first time, price scanners, membership-based superstores. Y'all, what we all know and love is Costco. I love Costco. Began in 1976 in San Diego as Price Club. So by the 1970s, we're now starting to move beyond grocery stores into places where you have to have a membership to go in. But still, Costco is pretty awesome. And then the 1980s, you get the first versions of what we know as supercenters, stores that not only have groceries, but also banks, pharmacies, flower areas, photo centers, and even McDonald's. Walmart, of course, is the big name that you know. And since then, we've had a ton of other evolutions too, like online delivery service. That actually, the first online delivery service for groceries started in 1989. If you didn't know, of course, it wasn't jump-started until recently. Amazon in 2007 started their Amazon Fresh program. Organic foods got a huge boost in 2002. That's the year they became federally regulated. In the last few years, you've had grocery stores making their own private label brands that have taken off against other brands of items. And you've also had prepared foods that are almost like visiting a restaurant inside of a grocery store. Those have taken off as well, and they've become very profitable for those stores. So we've come a long way since the first grocery stores and supermarkets almost a century ago. And that includes the actual stores that we're shopping from. Let's transition over to our next point, which is where you buy your groceries depends on where you live, as you probably know. Because I mentioned brands earlier like Kroger and Safeway that have been around for over 100 years and you probably still shop at, but there were and are many other grocery store chains across the country, because it does depend. If you live where there's no Kroger stores, you don't go to Kroger. If you live where there's no Safeway stores, you don't go to Safeway. I've barely been to any Safeways, but I've been to a ton of Krogers, I can tell you. But of course, those aren't the only ones. It does depend on where you live. Because if you take a look at the most popular grocery store chains across the country, or at least the ones with the highest market share, this is from 2022, when Chain Store Guide released their latest data about which grocers had the highest market share. It was Walmart that came out far ahead. It had a 25.2% market share. That's a quarter of the entire market of groceries Walmart has. Costco is next up at 7.1%, followed by Kroger at 5.6%. Then you get Sam's Club, which is owned by Walmart. That's Walmart's membership-only warehouse. They had 4.7%, followed by Publix, which is another grocer, at 4.4%. And then on the top 10 list, you also had Target, HEB, Safeway, Whole Foods, and Dollar General. So with that, you're not just talking about typical grocery stores, but also superstores, club stores, and even dollar stores. Like I said earlier, we have moved far beyond only grocery stores are the places where you get your groceries. But if you talk about in terms of visit share, which is the percentage of total visits that a retailer received during a given time frame compared to other retailers, CNBC found this data last year. They narrowed it down to just typical grocery store chains, so get rid of Walmart and Target and Dollar General. Kroger came out ahead. They had a 9.1% visit share. Publix was next, 8.1%, and Safeway was at 5%. And then also on that list, you had Aldi, which is a low-cost German chain, which has sprung up massively over the last few years, HEB, Walmart's Neighborhood Market, which only sells groceries, smaller Walmart, Meijer, Food Lion, Trader Joe's, and Whole Foods.
This is true.
But as y'all know, there's many other chains as well, because among the national chains, you can count Kroger, Target, Costco, Walmart, Whole Foods, and Albertsons, but you've also got a ton of other regional brands too. Like in the eastern part of the country, you've got companies like Ahold Delhaize, Weiss Markets, Giant Eagle, and Wegmans take up a significant market share, y'all. I love Wegmans. In the western states, you've got places like Raley's, Save Mart, and Winco. Places like Hy-Vee and Meijer in the Midwest. And then in the south, you've got Food City, Ingles, Piggly Wiggly, Winn-Dixie, and Publix. Then you'll find probably way more, 100 local chains as well, just sprouted up in different places across the country. So there's a ton of places out there in this country that you can shop for groceries. That, of course, does not mean that the grocery store business has been immune to acquisitions, closures, and mergers over the years, because you'll find a multitude of chains that have either closed or they've been acquired by somebody else. Food and Water Watch found that between 1996 and 1999, it's just 4 years, at the tail end of this big period for mergers and acquisitions, not just in the grocery sector, in a ton of other sectors as well, there were 385 grocery store mergers in just 4 years, almost 100 per year. And that was 25 years ago. But even now, Forbes found that there were 30% fewer grocery stores in 2022 than there were a decade ago because of consolidation.
Whoops.
Now, if you're talking about the biggest grocery store chains, they've had something to do with this. Because if you take a look at the largest supermarket company in the country, that would be Kroger. Kroger is also the fifth largest retailer in the U.S. And it doesn't just own Kroger stores, y'all. It has over 1,200 Kroger locations in the U.S., but it also owns Harris Teeter, which it bought in 2014. That has over 200 locations on the East Coast. On the West Coast, it owns Ralph's and Fred Meyer, which it bought in the late 90s. Those each have over 100 locations. And its first big acquisition was Dillon's in 1983, which alongside other brands like King Soopers and Fry's, they have over 300 locations. And Kroger operates stores under at least 10 other brands. So the Kroger company owns a lot more than just Kroger. And then the second largest supermarket-focused company is Albertsons, right behind Kroger. In fact, Albertsons isn't even the company's largest chain. There's only about 350 Albertsons locations in the U.S. In case you didn't know, in 2015, Albertsons bought Safeway, which has over 900 locations across the U.S., much larger. And that acquisition included other brands that were owned by Safeway, like Vons, Pavilions, and Tom Thumb. Those collectively add over another 300 locations. The company bought American Stores Company in the late 90s, which added brands like Acme Markets and Jewel-Osco. And Albertsons also owns United Supermarkets, Shaw's, and at least eight other grocer brands. So it's not just Albertsons and Safeway. Albertsons owns a lot more than just Albertsons and Safeway. And those are, of course, not the only two companies that own large numbers of grocery stores. The aforementioned Ahold Delhaize, which you've probably never heard of, is a Dutch company. They own Food Lion, Giant, which also operates Martin's, Giant Food. Apparently, Giant Food is different from Giant, even though they're owned by the same company, and Stop and Shop. And then, of course, there's other companies, Publix, Wegmans, Meijer, a ton of others. So it is true that there are many grocery store companies across the country, but many of them are actually owned by one of a few companies. But as I said earlier, there is a reason we're going to focus in on Kroger and Albertsons on this podcast this week. That's because the two largest grocers in the U.S. have announced their plans to become one. Back in October of 2022, we are 1.5 years past this point, the Kroger Company and Albertsons Companies Incorporated announced their plans to merge. Kroger would buy Albertsons in a deal that has valued the latter company at $24.6 billion. And when they announced the agreement, they sent out a joint statement between the two companies that read, quote, Kroger and Albertsons today announced that they have entered into a definitive agreement under which the companies will merge two complementary organizations with iconic brands and deep roots in their local communities to establish a national footprint and unite around Kroger's purpose to feed the human spirit. Through a family of well-known and trusted supermarket banners, this combination will expand customer reach and improve proximity to deliver fresh and affordable food to approximately 85 million households with a premier omnichannel experience, unquote. Now, in that announcement, they also set a timeline for the merger to be completed by early 2024. Well, as you all know, it is early 2024 as of this taping of this podcast, and nothing has happened as of yet. And it doesn't look like it's going to for a little bit of time. That's because when the top two supermarket companies in the country decide they want to become one company, some people tend to take a closer look. And that includes the federal government, because after a year and a half of reviewing the deal, they sued to stop the merger just last week. On Monday, February 26th, the Federal Trade Commission sued to block the deal, filing a 24-page complaint in federal court, which you can read online, although some parts are redacted. You can't read them. But it also features helpful graphics that are provided by the FTC to show the extent of what Kroger owns and what Albertsons owns, and where, too. I'll read you some parts of this complaint, though, to illustrate why exactly the federal government is against this deal. So basically, right at the beginning of this complaint, here's how it starts.
Story time!
Quote, especially against this backdrop, the merger of two grocery giants could have severe consequences for consumers and communities across the country. Kroger and Albertsons are the number one and number two traditional supermarket chains in the United States. Their combined footprint is vast, approximately 5,000 stores, 4,000 retail pharmacies, and 700,000 employees across 48 states. It continues, quote, today, Kroger and Albertsons compete intensely for consumers and workers in hundreds of communities across the country. Kroger executives, in turn, describe Albertsons' banners as, quote, our number one direct competitor, unquote. For millions of consumers, direct competition between Kroger and Albertsons has brought grocery prices down and the quality of grocery products and services up. The proposed acquisition would destroy this competition, leaving consumers to foot the bill. Consumers are not the only ones who will pay the price if this proposed acquisition is completed. The hundreds of thousands of people who work for Kroger and Albertsons would suffer too. Today, Kroger and Albertsons compete aggressively with one another to hire and retain grocery workers, principally through collective bargaining negotiations with local unions, i.e. the process by which workers, though the unions that represent them, negotiate agreements with their employers that determine the terms and conditions of employment. This competition has resulted in higher wages, better benefits, and improved working conditions for employees. The proposed acquisition would eliminate this competition, threatening the ability of hundreds of thousands of grocery store workers to secure stronger contracts with improved wages and benefits, unquote. Those quotes are from the first section of the complaint, which is titled The Nature of the Case, and the complaint goes on to explain why, in further detail, the proposed deal is unlawful and cannot go through. I'll let you read further if you want to. But essentially, here's what the FTC is alleging in its summary of the deal. They say, quote, the FTC charges that the proposed deal will eliminate fierce competition between Kroger and Albertsons, leading to higher prices for groceries and other essential household items for millions of Americans. The loss of competition will also lead to lower quality products and services, while also narrowing consumers' choices for where to shop for groceries. For thousands of grocery store workers, Kroger's proposed acquisition of Albertsons would immediately erase aggressive competition for workers, threatening the ability of employees to secure higher wages, better benefits, and improved working conditions, unquote. Now, the FTC includes quotes from executives, as well as a list of cities where prices are likely to go up due to a loss of competition as evidence in its favor. You can see that list of cities online. There's a ton of them in a bunch of different states. But, that's what the FTC is saying, what about the other side? Why do Kroger and Albertsons believe it is essential for them to join forces? As the Associated Press wrote back in February, quote, the company said a merger would help them better compete with big retailers like Walmart, Costco, and Amazon, which owns Whole Foods, because they have more power to negotiate prices and could save on distribution and administrative costs. Together, they would control about 13% of the U.S. grocery market. Walmart now controls 22%, while Costco controls 6%, according to J.P. Morgan analyst Ken Goldman, unquote. Indeed, the argument that the two companies will likely use is that their main competitors are not only traditional supermarkets like Food Lion and Wegmans and Publix, but also companies like Walmart and Target and Costco and Amazon, which are now fully committed to selling groceries. But the federal government disagrees. It said in the complaint it filed, quote, supermarkets recognize other supermarkets as a distinct type of food and grocery retailer. For example, supermarkets track and respond to other supermarkets' promotions and customer service options. When determining their pricing, supermarkets primarily consider the pricing of other supermarkets, unquote. As an opinion columnist in the New York Times, Peter Coy, wrote last month, quote, in other words, the FTC argues, extinguishing the rivalry between Kroger and Albertsons would be bad, even though customers can still shop at club stores like Costco and Sam's Club, limited assortment stores such as Aldi and Trader Joe's, premium and organic stores, dollar stores, and online purveyors, unquote. But he previously wrote in that column, quote, Kroger is a distant second to Walmart with a 10% market share, and Albertsons is fourth behind Costco with 6%. So even if Kroger and Albertsons merged, they would only be a little more than half of Walmart's size. This is where things get interesting. The FTC obviously can't argue that Kroger and Albertsons would tower over all competitors, so it's making a seller case. It says that the market that's relevant for assessing competition isn't all sellers of groceries in general, but supermarkets in particular, unquote. And Kroger and Albertsons executives have also continued to push back on claims that prices would rise, wages would fall, or at least not keep up with inflation, and reduced competition would result in more unfavorable bargaining deals for unions. Kroger and Albertsons, if you didn't know, are the largest union-based grocers in the U.S., competing against the aforementioned Walmart, Target, Costco, and Amazon, which are all largely non-union. That point was emphasized by Kroger's chairman and CEO Rodney McMullen when the companies first announced their merger. He said, quote, "This merger advances our commitment to build a more equitable and sustainable food system by expanding our footprint into new geographies to serve more of America with fresh and affordable food and accelerates our position as a more compelling alternative to larger and non-union competitors. As a combined entity, we will be better positioned to advance Kroger's successful go-to-market strategy by providing an incredible seamless shopping experience, expanding our brand's portfolio, and delivering personalized value and savings. We'll also be able to further enhance technology and innovation, promote healthier lifestyles, extend our healthcare and pharmacy network, and grow our alternative profit businesses. We believe this transaction will lead to faster and more profitable growth and generate greater returns for our shareholders," unquote. He continued, though, in that statement, quote, "Importantly, the merger secures union jobs, and we will continue to work with local unions across America to serve our communities," unquote. Albertson's response to the FTC's complaint, it wrote in a statement, is, quote, "If the Federal Trade Commission is successful in blocking this merger, it would be hurting customers and helping strengthen larger multi-channel retailers such as Amazon, Walmart, and Costco, the very companies the FTC claims to be reining in, by allowing them to continue increasing their growing dominance of the grocery industry," unquote. Kroger has continued to claim throughout the last year and a half that it would not close stores, it would not eliminate frontline jobs, it would invest in Albertsons stores, it would increase wages and benefits, and it would put $500 million into price investment, fancy words for saying they would lower prices. That's what they claim, although as of now, there's no legal binding to those claims.
These are facts.
So, while the two companies continue to emphasize that as a combined company, increased efficiencies are going to allow them to lower prices, raise wages, and assist their unions, they'll also say that larger companies with more market share are now their main competitors. But there's also other facets to this deal that deserve scrutiny, because it isn't just the federal government that is opposed to this deal. There are 9 other states that have joined the FTC in lawsuits: Arizona, California, Colorado, Illinois, Maryland, Nevada, New Mexico, Washington, Wyoming, and the District of Columbia have also joined the FTC. Now, Colorado and Washington filed their own lawsuits before the FTC's late last month, and Colorado's is particularly revelatory. Matt Stoller, who was a fellow at the Open Markets Institute, which is a nonprofit that's dedicated to strengthening antitrust law and stopping monopolies, along with being a former senior policy analyst and budget analyst to the Senate Budget Committee, wrote in a blog post on Substack last month regarding Colorado's lawsuit against the merger, quote, "Merger investigations are an in-depth examinations of firm strategy, with lawyers poring through millions of emails turned over as part of the review process. Usually these documents include employees writing embarrassing things, like, you are basically creating a monopoly in grocery with a merger. It's like AT&T and Verizon wanting to merge. Or executives saying, we are being bought by our enemy. Or musings on how a deal can't possibly be approved because it would create a monopoly." Albertsons wrote internally that where there's less competition, it can hike prices and quote-unquote margin up, and Kroger similarly noted that it can pursue a quote-unquote different price strategy in those circumstances. All of those things are in the complaints and executives will be asked about them, but that's standard for a merger trial. No, what's amazing is what they found independent of the merger itself. The Colorado Attorney General Phil Weiser published evidence in his complaint that the two firms routinely colluded to not hire each other's workers in order to suppress wages and break their unions. This dynamic was particularly bad in early 2022 when unionized workers at a Kroger supermarket chain, King Soopers, went on strike after their contract expired. And let's be clear, these firms hate unions. Kroger executives, for instance, had previously considered quote-unquote closing unionized stores in Washington State for a period of time to make them non-union, those in quotes. Why didn't Kroger shut down union stores temporarily? The answer is competition. If they had done so, rivals would have taken their customers. A different path, rather than shutting stores, was to work with a rival to collude against workers, which is what Albertsons and Kroger did. And there are emails. This isn't surprising, though it's always shocking to read stuff this blatant. On January 9th, 2022, the SVP of Labor Relations at Albertsons, Daniel Dosenbach, wrote his counterpart at Kroger, John McPherson, who was the VP for Labor and Associate Relations at Kroger, and pledged not to hire any striking workers, unquote. If you are unsure, a screenshot of that email was included in the lawsuit. And also, if you're unsure of whether or not that activity may be a crime, it likely is called wage fixing. But since the FTC doesn't have criminal jurisdiction, it is up to the Department of Justice to determine whether or not this activity really was illegal, which I'm sure they'll investigate. And Colorado's lawsuit is not the only one to include that information. The FTC's complaint also mentions those accusations, although that section of the complaint features lots of black ink, which means redacted information that is not currently available to the public. But that section of the complaint does end by reading, quote, "The proposed acquisition would eliminate a competing employer for union grocery workers and would greatly increase respondents' leverage during negotiations with labor unions. With more leverage, the combined Kroger-Albertsons would likely be able to impose terms on union grocery workers that slow wage increases and improvements to benefits or degrade working conditions," unquote. That is, of course, a major part of this lawsuit, especially when you have a current administration who has been super pro-labor and pro-unions. And there's another aspect that's become important here, a way in which Kroger and Albertsons have attempted to appease federal regulators into approving the deal. You see that happen all the time in deals like this. So it's not really out of the ordinary. If you remember, a couple years ago, T-Mobile bought Sprint in wireless technology. T-Mobile had to sell off a bunch of other things to Dish Network to create their own wireless service because of that deal. Well, Kroger and Albertsons said last year, before any lawsuits were filed, that they would sell off hundreds of stores that they own.
It's a fact.
Here's what the Associated Press wrote about that back in September of last year. They said, quote, "Kroger and Albertsons will sell more than 400 stores and other assets for about $1.9 billion, seeking to clear a path for a merger with antitrust regulators reviewing a deal that would unify two of the nation's largest grocery chains. The 413 stores, along with QFC, Mariano's, and Carr's brand names, are being sold to C&S Wholesale Grocers. Kroger will also divest the Debbie Lilly Design, Primo Taglio, Open Nature, Ready Meals, and Waterfront Bistro private label brands. In addition, C&S will get 8 distribution centers and 2 offices. All fuel centers and pharmacies associated with the divested stores will remain with the stores and continue to operate," unquote. The article goes on to say, quote, "The grocery chains say they must merge to compete with Walmart, Amazon, and other major companies that have stepped into the grocery business. And there is significant consolidation throughout the grocery sector as companies fight with rising prices for everything from food to workers. Last month, as in August of 2023, discount grocer Aldi said it plans to buy 400 Winn-Dixie and Harvey supermarkets in the southern U.S. Before the deal with C&S closes, Kroger may, in connection with securing Federal Trade Commission and other government clearance require CNS to buy up to an additional 237 stores in certain regions. If more stores are added to the agreement, CNS will pay Kroger an additional, as yet to be determined, financial amount. CNS, which was founded in 1918, is a supplier to independent grocery stores, supplying more than 7,500 independent supermarkets, retail chain stores, and military bases. It also currently runs Grand Union grocery stores and Piggly Wiggly franchise and corporate-owned stores in the Midwest and the Carolinas, unquote. Yet, the federal government does not appear entirely convinced by this proposal. The FTC's complaint reads regarding this part of the merger, quote, "Recognizing that their proposed merger would be unlawful, Kroger and Albertsons proposed to divest a hodgepodge of several hundred of their more than 5,000 stores and cast-off assets to C&S Wholesale Grocers, what they're calling proposed divestiture. Until very recently, C&S's century-long business model was that of a wholesale supplier specializing in grocery supply chain solutions. As recently as 2021, C&S operated only two retail supermarkets. Today, C&S operates 23 supermarkets and a single retail pharmacy, mostly in New York and Wisconsin. Through this divestiture, C&S is seeking to grow its retail footprint nearly 18-fold overnight. Yet, up until 2021, C&S stated in its quarterly reports that, quote, we do not intend to grow our grocery retailing operations or to operate the retail grocery stores in the long term, unquote. So basically, what the federal government is arguing is that Kroger and Albertsons are going to sell these stores to a company that has very little experience running grocery stores and has also said within the last 3 years that it does not plan to operate retail grocery stores in the long term. But the complaint continues. It says, quote, divesting these individual assets to a grocery wholesaler with limited experience operating retail supermarkets will fail to mitigate the substantial harm to consumers and workers from lost competition between Kroger and Albertsons. C&S would be requiring a patchwork of assets cobbled together by Kroger's antitrust lawyers, not a standalone business likely to succeed, unquote. Basically, put that in layman's terms, the government is not convinced of Kroger's proposal to sell off a bunch of stores to C&S.
Big fact incoming!
There's actually experience to go back to when you look at this proposal, because Albertsons, when they bought Safeway back in 2015, it sold off 146 of those stores to Hagen, which is a Washington state-based regional supermarket chain. However, Washington State's lawsuit against the merger explains what happened in the aftermath of that deal. It says, quote, Hagen lacked the infrastructure to rapidly expand to a multi-state national grocery retailer and struggled immensely to operate the divested stores. 6 months after the divestiture, Hagen was forced to lose 127 stores, 14 of them in Washington, and lay off thousands of workers, more than 1,130 of whom had worked in Washington State, unquote. As the Northwest Labor Press wrote regarding that deal, quote, in 2015, to get FTC approval of its merger with Safeway, Albertsons agreed to sell 146 stores to Hagen, a Northwest chain that owned 18 stores. Less than a year after the sale, Hagen filed for bankruptcy and sued Albertsons for $1 billion. In the suit, Hagen said Albertsons purposely sabotaged the sale. Leading up to the handoff, it overstocked stores so products spoiled and understocked others so customers complained about a lack of product. It reduced advertising for the stores it was selling before Hagen took over, and it kept the customer data from loyalty rewards programs so Hagen couldn't use that information in advertising, unquote. So there is prior experience of a merger resulting in grocery stores being sold off, and that experience was not positive. So all that information has not only led to the FTC and the aforementioned states opposing that deal, but also a ton of labor unions and a bipartisan mixture of members of Congress have also come out against the deal. Last year, the United Food and Commercial Workers Union, which represents a majority of the workers at the two companies, voted to oppose the merger, although UFCW Local 555, which represents workers in Oregon and Idaho, voted to support the deal earlier this year because it says that it trusts C&S to operate the stores that are sold to them in those two states. However, that last sentiment has not been common. Angela Huffman, who is the president of Farm Action, which is a nonprofit that focuses on preventing monopolies and encourages competitive rural markets, said of the FTC's complaint that it is, quote, a critical step forward for America's farmers, workers, and consumers. A combined Kroger-Albertsons would have catastrophic impacts across our entire food system, from decreasing the number of purchasers for farmers to sell to, cutting jobs for workers, and increasing prices for consumers. This is a bad deal for everyone except the company's shareholders, unquote. And the co-executive director of the nonprofit, the Institute for Local Self-Reliance, Stacy Mitchell, called the proposed merger a, quote, disaster for American communities, unquote. She continued in her statement by saying, quote, this decision shows the FTC sees what we have long argued. There was no upside to this merger for anybody other than the top executives at these companies and their investors. Concentration in grocery retail has already caused food prices to skyrocket. We know from past grocery mergers that this one would have sent prices for consumers even higher. It would have left many communities, especially on the West Coast, with little to no competition or choice about where to shop. And it would have hurt retail workers by giving the combined companies even more leverage to push down wages and dictate terms, unquote. And then finally, Mark Person, the president of UFCW International, the aforementioned union that represents many of those grocery store workers, he said, quote, regardless of the next legal steps, we must never forget that Kroger and Albertsons are successful because of these incredibly dedicated workers, and no proposed merger should be allowed to endanger their jobs or their livelihoods, unquote. So that's what the unions are saying. And then in Congress, you've got the heads of the Senate Judiciary Committee's antitrust panel, both Senators Amy Klobuchar, who's a Democrat from Minnesota, and Mike Lee, who's a Republican from Utah. They've both expressed concern regarding the deal. So have other Democratic senators like Jackie Rosen, Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, and Ron Wyden. And then on the Republican side, you've got Senators Lisa Murkowski and Dan Sullivan, who applauded the FTC's decision to block the merger. Both of those senators are from Alaska.
Too many facts.
Those are basically the facts of the case that you need to know. So now that you know the facts of the case, what is going to happen next? Which is kind of up in the air, because a hearing has been set in the federal case for July 31st. The FTC wants a federal judge to issue a temporary injunction that would bar the merger. And if a federal judge grants a preliminary injunction, then the case would go to an administrative law judge at the FTC. That would be, as the Cincinnati Inquirer wrote last month, a, quote, mini trial with evidence and witnesses, unquote, but there would be no jury present at that trial. And just if you didn't know, Kroger is headquartered in Cincinnati, Ohio. And the director of the Competition Law Center at George Washington University, William Kovacic, told the Inquirer that, quote, 90% of companies that fail to block preliminary injunctions abandon their merger plans, unquote. Meaning that if that preliminary injunction is granted, as the federal government wants, the FTC wants in this case, the merger proceedings would be delayed, and that could cause the companies to call off the deal.
Fact nugget.
Any decision that that judge makes can then be appealed to the FTC commissioners, whose decision can then be appealed up through the court system all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. Of course, it's not clear how far Kroger and Albertsons would go if it gets to that point where it's starting to make its way through the FTC and through the court systems. So that's what could happen next. But something to also note here is that this is not a typical merger block by the FTC, because the FTC and the DOJ actually just published a revision of their merger guidelines back in December that attempt to make mergers harder to complete. Here's what Peter Coy in the New York Times wrote about these new guidelines last month. He said, quote, since 1982, antitrust authorities have evaluated mergers by whether a hypothetical monopolist formed by the merger could get away with raising prices without losing business. To be specific, whether the new company could, as the guidelines put it, profitably impose at least a small but significant and non-transitory increase in price, which is known as SSNIP, for one of the merging company's products. If not, there's not too much to worry about. The revised guidelines give trustbusters an additional tripwire. Now, a merger can't result in other worsening of terms, or SSNIPT. Those terms that could be worsened include quality, service, capacity investment, choice of product variety, or features or other innovative effort. He continued, quote, "The FTC is right, of course, that price isn't the only thing that matters. One challenge for the agency, though, is to demonstrate that other measures, such as quality, service, and product variety, can be measured as objectively as price. If SSNIPT becomes a pivotal issue in this case and the FTC wins on it, it will set the agency up to challenge other mergers on similar grounds. The proposed Kroger-Albertsons merger will be a big test for labor protections built into the new merger guidelines. Kroger and Albertsons have largely unionized workforces. If a merger means they stop competing for workers, wages could be suppressed," the FTC argues, unquote. So, in other words, to recap what I just read, this is the first time that the FTC is blocking a merger based on the grounds that it will hurt labor unions and not just increase prices. The increase in prices is why mergers have been blocked before by the federal government. This is the first time that the federal government is looking at labor unions when deciding whether to block a proposed merger or not. Of course, as Coy notes in that article, it's unknown whether judges who previously handled antitrust cases under the old guidelines are going to be following the new ones. And the FTC, of course, is not the only entity that has filed a lawsuit against this deal. As I mentioned earlier, the attorneys general in Colorado and Washington State had previously filed their own lawsuits. So what that also means is that while there's going to be a trial in federal court that takes place, another is also going to take place in Colorado State Court, and another is going to take place in Washington State Court. And while both states are also seeking to stop the merger, Colorado's goes even farther because it seeks to fine both companies $1 million each for what we talked about earlier, to not solicit each other's customers or workers, the wage fixing. And $1 million, that's not a lot of money for these multi-billion dollar corporations, but if Kroger and Albertsons are found liable of wage fixing, it opens the door to further lawsuits that could not only destroy the merger, but could also cause major investigations to be opened into these two companies, because you're going beyond not just getting a merger approved, you're breaking law there. If they're found liable, we'll see. So, that's what could happen next. But in conclusion, what does this mean for grocery stores in America? To wrap this all up, because of the many battlefronts that this war is going to be fought on, as I said, federal court, state court, public opinion is also a big factor when you're talking about grocery stores. It's likely, I'd say, and I think a lot of people would say, that the merger is either going to be blocked by the courts or it's abandoned before it even gets to that point.
Xander's facts.
But in the slim chance that it is able to go through, again, I gave you the facts. Take with that what you will. Form your own opinions. But I'll just give you my two cents. It is likely to be at the detriment of the consumer. Because yes, you've got companies like Walmart and Amazon that are competing at lower prices to both Kroger and Albertsons. But there's still a reason why Kroger and Albertsons are still in existence. Why people still go to the grocery store instead of shopping on Amazon and going to Walmart. Because price is not just important, as we talked about. Quality, convenience, selection, and loyalty are still important, at least to consumers, as you would probably know if you go to the grocery store. If you go to Walmart and you buy crappy bananas, but they're super cheap, but you can go to Kroger and get nice, ripe, healthy bananas for more, I would probably spend more money to get the good bananas at Kroger. Or if Kroger has more of a variety of bananas, or it's closer to my house, or whatever. This merger not only threatens those aspects, quality, convenience, selection, loyalty, of the grocery shopping experience, it also threatens to raise prices for consumers and harm the workers who keep these stores running, because the resulting merged company would reduce competition in a ton of different areas across the country. Colorado's attorney general gave the example of the city of Gunnison, Colorado, in his lawsuit. He noted that in Gunnison, there are only two grocery stores There's City Market, which is owned by Kroger, and Safeway, which is owned by Albertsons. If the merger goes through, the closest non-Kroger-owned grocery store would be 65 miles away.
Yikes!
So at that point, if you are Kroger, why would you not just say, well, people don't have any other choice, so let's raise prices, let's cut benefits, and even potentially, because we have two stores, why don't we just consolidate them into one? Now, as I have said, Kroger and Albertsons have continued to say that they are not going to do those things. But again, there's nothing legally binding them to not doing so in this case. And this lawsuit doesn't even just affect grocery stores, because as I mentioned earlier, it is the first time that the FTC is attempting to block a corporate acquisition on the grounds of labor concerns. So if they succeed, it's likely going to embolden the federal government further to block mergers in many sectors, not just supermarkets, because the Biden administration has been extremely active in antitrust litigation. In the 2022 fiscal year, the FTC brought 24 merger enforcement challenges, which was the second largest number in a fiscal year in the last 10 years. And the government has won in some cases. They won JetBlue, was going to try and acquire Spirit Airlines in the airline sector. JetBlue decided recently to not do that, so that's over. But they've lost in some as well. Microsoft successfully took over Activision in the video game space recently. So to conclude all of this, this is not a cut and dry merger case that would create an effective monopoly in groceries if it was to go through, because obviously you have many other grocery stores, you have other places that sell groceries too, but it would still be of detriment, at least in my opinion, and in many others, to shoppers and workers if it were to go through while benefiting the executives and shareholders of these companies. I think that is something, that last part is something everybody can agree on, because I read you the Kroger statement earlier when they talked about how this deal would benefit shareholders. So that last part is something everybody can agree on, both sides. But those who are against this merger are going to say it's going to raise prices, it could cut benefits and wages, at least against inflation for workers, and it will reduce competition. And we have seen previously when deals not just in grocery stores go through, when competition is reduced, companies raise prices. Why? Because they can. There's not as much competition. People don't have as many places to go to anymore. So that's my two cents. But again, I gave you all the facts. You can make your own decisions based on all the facts that have been laid out on this podcast regarding Kroger and Albertsons. But if I had to be frank with you, this deal is probably, with everything stacked against it, it is likely not going to go through. But even though that's the case, I just found it really interesting how the grocery store and where we shop and all these brands are now involved in controversy and increased government regulation and all of these different things. It's interesting to look at because, as I said again, it's not just going to affect grocery stores. It's going to affect other potential mergers that happen as well, because the government now is not only focusing on whether mergers will increase prices, but also whether they will hurt workers and labor unions. That's why this Kroger-Albertsons deal is so important. Even if you don't shop at Kroger or Safeway or any of the dozens of brands that those two companies own collectively. So,
that's a lot of facts.
Those are all the facts that I have for y'all on grocery stores, on Kroger, and on Albertsons. And those are all the facts I have for y'all on episode 134 of the Xander's Facts podcast. Thank you all so much for listening. Remember that if you liked all the facts that we had on this week's edition, remember to follow this podcast, download this episode, rate and review the podcast, check us out on all the socials, Threads, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, at Xander's Facts, that's Xander with AZ. And most importantly, remember to tell all your friends, y'all, spread the facts, tell all your friends about the podcast, the newsletter, Xander's Weekend Facts, and also check out Xander's Facts on YouTube, our YouTube page. All our new episodes, including this one, get posted to our YouTube channel. You can watch with a nice background while I spread all the facts. It's wonderful. Go subscribe to that. And also check out the Xander's Facts link tree. It is linked in this episode's description, and it has all the Xander's Facts links that you need. So that is it, y'all. We're finally back. This was some good facts, y'all. I hope you enjoyed them. Episode 134. I've got some plans for the next 2 weeks. We're not going on hiatus with our flashbacks for a little bit, because next week, college basketball. Y'all, it's March. I don't know if y'all know what March means. It means March Madness. And next week is our college basketball conference tournament podcast. One of my favorite times of the year. Some of my favorite weeks of the year are coming up, because college basketball conference tournaments, the big men's conference tournaments, start next week. And then the week after, of course, we are going to have our exclusive Xander's Facts men's March Madness bracket reveal, as we do every year for the fourth time on this podcast. That's absolutely insane. And of course, this year, I've been following the women's game a lot more, and I think a lot of people have as well, with Iowa and Caitlin Clark, and South Carolina's undefeated, and my Virginia Tech Hokies have done pretty well this year too. We're, of course, going to mention them as well in the next 2 weeks as we talk college basketball postseason on this podcast over the next couple weeks. I'm excited for these podcasts, y'all. These are some of my favorite podcasts that we do every year. So make sure to tune into those. Episode 135 coming up next week. But that is it, y'all. That is a wrap on episode 134 of the Xander's Facts podcast. Thank you all so much for listening, and we'll see y'all with episode 135 next week.
No religion, no anything. Hurt the Bible, hurt God. He's against God, he's against guns.